None of us have been able to travel much this year. So, to satisfy some wanderlust, Louisiana Eats is traveling back in time this week when we took our ultimate foodie vacation to France. We begin at Clos Lucet, a 15th century manor that Leonardo da Vinci once called home.
He organized parties here, big parties. He said he organized such a party that the night was the day.
And then we hit the streets of Paris for an insider's tour of the best gourmet shops in the city.
This is Carrefour de Cochon. I jokingly refer to it as a temple of ham because when you come in here, you're surrounded by beautiful dried sausages that come from all over Europe.
Parlez-vous français? Don't worry, we're handling the translation on this week's Louisiana Eats. That's coming up next. But first, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. The Trump administration says it's optimistic that a bipartisan agreement on the next coronavirus relief bill can be reached by the end of the week. Congressional Democrats have been in talks with White House negotiators for the last several days and are working to iron out their differences on several provisions of the measure. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi tells MSNBC that the two sides are inching closer to a deal.
I'm pretty happy. I think we have a prospect for an agreement. I do not believe that our timetable has come and gone. We had a purpose in the timetable, which is that we would establish where we were.
The overall price tag of the next relief bill has been the biggest roadblock in negotiations. House Democrats have put forth a $2.2 trillion measure that includes another round of direct payments for out-of-work Americans. The Trump administration has come back with a roughly $1.8 trillion proposal. Lawyers for the American Civil Liberties Union say they've been unable to find the parents of more than 500 children who were separated from their families at the southern border. NPR's Joel Rose reports the kids were taken from their parents under the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy 2 years ago.
These families were separated before the Trump administration ended its so-called zero-tolerance policy, which was intended to deter other migrant families from crossing the border illegally. Many of these families were separated in 2017 during a pilot program that was not publicly acknowledged at the time, and before a federal judge ordered the government to reunite children in its custody with their parents. Lawyers for the ACLU, which sued to block the policy, say they have been unable to locate the parents of 545 children. Those lawyers believe about two-thirds of the parents who have not been found were deported back to their home countries. Volunteers have been searching for them by going door-to-door in Guatemala and Honduras. Joel Rose, NPR News.
Former Vice President Joe Biden is entering the final stretch of the presidential race with nearly three times as much campaign funding than President Trump. NPR's Barbara Sprunt reports it's a major reversal for Trump, who started his reelection bid with a large cash advantage.
The president's campaign committee finished the month of September with $63 million cash on hand, compared to Biden's $177 million. The Biden campaign, the DNC, and joint fundraising committees raised $383 million in September, bringing its total to a whopping $432 million in the bank. By comparison, the Trump campaign, the RNC, and its affiliated committees had $251 million at the start of October. Trump's campaign has been outspent on television ads in recent weeks as well, with Biden dominating the airwaves in crucial swing states such as Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Barbara Sprunt, NPR News.
On Wall Street, the Dow was down 34 points. This is NPR News. At least 12 women are dead after a stampede near a Pakistani consulate in eastern Afghanistan. Thousands of people were gathered at a soccer stadium in Jalalabad, waiting to get visas to enter neighboring Pakistan. The country recently eased its border restrictions amid the coronavirus pandemic, and many people are trying to cross the border to seek medical treatment. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is planning to get more involved in diplomacy in a former Soviet trouble spot. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports that he'll be hosting a meeting Friday with his counterparts from Armenia and Azerbaijan.
Fighting has flared in the disputed region of Nagorno-Karabakh, and Pompeo describes it as a complicated situation on the ground and a complicated diplomatic problem. Neither Azerbaijan nor Armenia is holding out any hope for a quick diplomatic solution. Turkey is still backing the Azeris.
Every country should stay out. provide no fuel for this conflict, no weapon systems, no support. And it is at that point that a diplomatic solution that would be acceptable to all can potentially be achieved.
Pompeo says one of his goals for Friday is to tell Armenia and Azerbaijan to de-escalate. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
Tropical storm warnings have been issued for Bermuda as Hurricane Epsilon continues to gain strength in the central Atlantic. The National Hurricane Center says the storm is packing winds of 90 miles per hour and is expected to start lashing the island later tonight. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Uma, a cloud-based phone service for small businesses with an automated virtual receptionist and mobility features to run business from anywhere. More at OOMA.com. And Americans for the Arts.
Listener support allows KRVS to provide exceptional programs in unprecedented times. You can help make sure that we can continue to grow to meet the ever-changing needs of our community. Contribute to your local source for news and information, music and culture at krvs.org.
Louisiana Eats is brought to you with support from Louisiana Fish Fry, a staple of Louisiana kitchens for nearly 40 years. Maker of batters, coatings, boils, tartar sauce, cocktail sauce, and more. Dig into homemade Louisiana flavor.
From our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. None of us have been able to travel much this year. So, to satisfy some wanderlust, we're traveling back in time this week on a magical trip Louisiana Eats took to France in the summer of 2015. We began in the Loire River Valley, where Count Bernard Saint-Brie gave us a personal tour of Leonardo da Vinci's last home, and then his charming sister, Marie Saint-Brie, welcomed us to the family chateau by entertaining us at an unforgettable Dîner Bleu. Next, we took Paris by Mouth, which also happens to be the name of a company that operates insider food-centric walking tours. Trust me, you're going to love every virtual bite. And finally, we toured a Parisian marché with American expats Patricia Wilson and Renette DeChico, who showed us just how they make groceries in France. Parlez-vous français? Don't worry, we'll handle the translation on this week's Louisiana Eats. After bidding a cheery adieu to my company of sound engineers in New Orleans, I arrived in France in the summer of 2015, ready to make the most of my 16-day stay and make some Louisiana Eats radio along the way. Soon after my plane touched down in Paris, I was whisked away on a fast train to the Loire River Valley, where I had the honor of meeting the noble Saint-Brie family and enjoying their generous hospitality. For generations, the family have owned a chateau, which today is listed as a historical monument, the famous Clos Lucet. This breathtaking manor was built in the 15th century and was originally the home of King Charles VII and his wife, Anne de Bretagne. Clos Lucet was the childhood home of King Francis I, and later the final dwelling place of Leonardo da Vinci. Da Vinci spent the last 4 years of his life at Clos Lucet and finished several masterpieces while there, including the Mona Lisa. In 1854, The historic home became the property of the St. Brie family, who used it as a country retreat, spending many summers and holidays there. In 1954, it was opened to the public and has become a popular destination for history buffs and Francophiles like me. So when a member of the St. Brie clan offered me and my fellow travelers a personal tour of their property, I made sure to bring my sound recorder with me. Here, with remembrances of his unusual childhood at Clos Lucet, is Count Bernard St. Brie.
Welcome. Welcome. So this is Le Clos Lucet. Originally, the name is Clos Luce, the Casa di Luce, the House of Light. That's why they call Leonardo da Vinci call it Le Clos Luce, La Maison de la Lumière. This house basically is part of the royal domain, belongs to Charles VIII and Anne de Bretagne. Later came François Ier, François I, who was the king of the Renaissance. The story of Leonardo da Vinci starts with François Ier. François Ier was a beautiful man of 20 years. And when François Ier went to Milano, he met Leonardo da Vinci, who was 60. And Leonardo da Vinci, as you know, maybe, was moving from one prince to the other. And he said, okay, why you don't come to France? Invite him to come. And Leonardo da Vinci said yes. And we must bear in mind, a man of 60 at that period, he was still in great shape, even though he was going to leave his country forever. He knew he won't never come back. But he said yes. And he crossed the Alps, the mountain, on a horseback, and he took the three main paintings, La Joconde, Mona Lisa, Sainte Anne, and Saint John the Baptist. Now, he stayed here 4 years, and he was very active. He finished to paint Mona Lisa. He designed many projects for François Ier. He organized parties here, big parties. He said he organized such a party that the impression is that the night was the day. And he organized a river that would link all the castles from one to the other. And he designed a castle of the future with the door open automatically. You know, he was very active and very happy to live here. He wrote a lot here. He designed a lot here. We know that maybe he spent the best latest four years of his life. He died here. François Ier managed to come to be there when he died. And he was named the artist of the kingdom. He was the first artist of the kingdom. They had a very strong relationship. François Ier named Leonardo da Vinci my father, and Leonardo da Vinci named him my son. That's a story. So we're going to visit now the house where he lived the 4 years of his life.
Bernard spoke of Leonardo as though he were a personal family friend who perhaps still walks the halls of the exquisite chateau.
We always see Leonardo as an old man with a big beard, but that's not the point. Leonardo da Vinci was a very handsome man, very tall, very strong. He was capable of riding horses, wild horses, taking them and keeping them under his power. He was vegetarian, and he wrote thousands of documents we call codex. And it remains a few. There is one which belongs to the Queen. There is one who belongs to Bill Gates. But I think what remain, a few thousand pages, but it would be only the third of what he designed. But extremely prolific, you know what, all the time. Which we used to say he has a mind of synthesis. He could make the synthesis of what was done before and present it as it's going to be in the future. Do you mind to come, Peter?
Once the visitors were done snapping pictures, we moved on to the living quarters where the Count and his family spent so many happy hours. Bernard had no ordinary childhood, even for a Count, and told us all about what it was like to come of age surrounded by Da Vinci's legacy.
So we lived there, and we lived in these beds, you know. And we were very frightened of Leonardo da Vinci, because I thought it was Renard. The fox, Leonardo da Vinci. You know, because we live with Leonardo da Vinci, we talk, my mother talked to us like he was still living because she didn't make the difference. I realized that was history, but later on. there was no water. They were the water with tubs, you know. We really lived like a long time ago. We had a very strange life. And when we went to school, you had problems, you know.
How much of the year would you be here?
No, we come for the winter, for Christmas, you know. It was the life stopped completely because, in fact, it belonged to a generation, two generations over my father, you know. And they didn't change. So when we spent the childhood, the toys were toys from the 19th century. Everything was, you know, nothing, no electricity, nothing. You know? And that's the way we were brought up, you know. So that's why we're maybe so strange.
Yes.
We didn't know. So it's too late to be cured. Too late to be cured. No chance.
Finally, we ended our tour at the entrance to the chateau's underground tunnel, a passageway that Francis I had constructed so he could visit his beloved Leonardo without being detected by the town folks.
And this is the underground to the chateau. So François Ier used to come and visit Leonardo through this underground, who walks under the city until the chateau.
Approximately, yeah. The distance is how long?
Maybe 2 kilometers.
When you were a child, did you all play in there?
Yes, we were very scared. We like to be scared.
So how far did you go to scare
our friends.
So how far did you go? Could you go all the way?
At that time, two kilometers to the castle.
You could go all the way when you were a child?
Yes, no, because it starts to be, when they build up the road, they start to. But no, you can go a certain distance. It's very frightening.
That was Count Bernard Saint-Brie of Chateau de Clos-Lucet. My 2015 stay in the Loire River Valley, I was a guest of the Saint-Brie family at their summer and holiday home, Chateau Beauchene. To welcome me and other visiting guests, Marie Saint-Brie decided to host a dîner bleu, a dinner party with an intense blue theme. I arrived with my recording equipment to find Marie hard at work in the dining room, setting an exquisite table with the finest of French accessories. Of course, all in blue. I asked her to introduce herself to my listeners.
Marie Saint-Brice. Merci. Thank you so much for inviting us into your beautiful home here at Beauchene. And tonight, you're hosting a very special dinner. Tell me about the dinner.
Well, as Beauchene is in the Loire Valley with such a blue sky, I thought it would be fantastic to put the blue in in light. And I decided to do a table as my grandmother did for her friends, guests and family. So I will do the dîner bleu. The blue dinner in English. And just for fun, I decide to put some different glasses, blue glasses and blue and white plates, like we could do in the Compagnie des Indes in the 18th century, which is the time when was built our house, Beauchene.
Beauchene is so beautiful, and I'm going to follow you as you set the table, the dinnerware, the tablecloth, the decanters. It's so beautiful and so many shades of blue.
Yes. So we have the chance to have a lot of blue and white of the 18th century in our house. So I decided to gather some old piece with new pieces, you know. And then as my grandmother was doing blue dinners, sometimes she was also doing blue food. I decided to make it more and more blue, you know, much and much. So I found in our other castle in the Clos Lucé where Leonardo da Vinci lived, I found that we had still some blue containers, crystal blue containers, and I bring them for the party tonight, you know. So it adds something little too much, you know. There is a little too much blue. And I think when you do tableware, it's nice to do something with just this little too much, which makes the table glitter, like, and it's party time, you know. As this house is 18th century, all that blue remind us all the Silk Road, all the Asian interest that the 18th century French people had for trip. Le Grand Voyage, La Chinoiserie. It was a way to make a very beautiful table. It was a way to receive your guest at his best. So tonight we have the chance to have American people, a lot of people from New Orleans who are extremely interested by French culture because it's their own culture too. And tonight I want to make a revival of this 18th century, which is in all our heads, like a phantasmagory, like a part of our imagination.
What's the provenance of the pieces on the table?
Well, first, at the center, you have a beautiful Compagnie des Indes blue and white soup container with a beautiful fruit on the top and on the edges, two animals looking at us, you know. This is an 18th century piece coming from our castle of the Clos Lucé. And we have that since the 19th century in our family, surely. And all the containers, the crystal blue containers, are also from the Saint-Brice family, from our family, since the 19th century, as I take them in the place where they in the closet of the Clos Lucé, you know, especially for tonight.
And you've decorated the room with not just the beautiful dinnerware and the beautiful blue crystal decanters. Tell me what special you have taken out to decorate the room.
Well, I like always to make something a little funny, you know, not too much serious, you know, not only a table which is well done. I think it's very important to do something with some gloss, something like a little, in French we say, something un petit peu mauvais goût, a little bad taste, you know, because this gives much more fun to the table and also to the conversation. So I decide to take a dog that we have under a big armoire, and I put this dog, which is in Celadon porcelain of the 18th century, coming from China. It's the name of what the name of the dog?
Well, it's my favorite dog. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm very fond of the Chinese pug. And there you have, sitting on that beautiful sideboard, an aqua-colored sort of Chinese pug with big brown realistic eyes. And Marie, he's wearing a turban.
Yes, I thought with a turban, he's giving the idea of the party, you know. He's helping us to get out of our normal mind and going in our imagination. So I found a turban, a very beautiful silk turban, and it's blue, dark blue, orange, Turkish blue, and I decided it was not enough, you know. I put also a very big heart on the turban with diamond and emerald, plus some roses from the garden. And like that, he's splendid. He's looking at the table, and he is waiting us for the dinner.
Well, I'm going to leave you to set your table.
Thank you.
I will rejoin you this evening at the blue dinner.
Thank you so much for being there. It's lovely to have you at home.
That night,
The guests and I gathered at Marie's table for an unforgettable evening of food, wine, and conversation. In true French fashion, Marie welcomed us to her table with a toast.
To the friendship of France and America.
Ah.
Louisiana. And Louisiana. And Chicago. So let's...
Our host made only one request, that our dialogue match the decor.
Let's speak blue.
Yes. With some white wine.
Yeah. Too blue.
This fabric is wine.
Yeah, this I find it too.
That was Marie Saint-Brie, host of Le Dîner Bleu, in the dining room of her family's Chateau Beauchene in France's Loire River Valley. Coming up next, my 2015 journey to France continues in Paris, where I join Jennifer Greco for an insider's tour of the best gourmet shops in the City of Lights. Louisiana Eats returns after the break.
Little piece of pie, little piece of pudding, give them all away to my little Sally Gooden.
Alan Reed and Peggy Seeger are live on stage this week, exchanging songs from the transatlantic carrying stream. Join us on the Thistle and Shamrock.
Coming up Sunday at 6 p.m. on KRVS.
Hearing loss is a fact of life for many humans, but not for fish, reptiles, or birds.
People noticed in chickens that they could take them to, say, a heavy metal concert, blast the ears really to oblivion, and then within days, new hair cells would begin to sprout.
The science of sound and ideas about hearing and listening. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Coming up tonight at 8, right here on KRVS.
This is listener-supported public radio for Acadiana, KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles. Like us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.
I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Camellia Brand, Beans Done Right, a New Orleans tradition since 1923, and from Ralph Brennan's Redfish Grill, home of the award-winning barbecue oyster Poor Boy and 9 varieties of fresh Gulf fish caught and served daily. Lunch, dinner, and private events at 115 Bourbon Street in the French Quarter. If you're just joining us, we're revisiting the trip I made to France in 2015. After my stay with the Saint-Brie family in the Loire River Valley, I journeyed back to Paris, where I took a food tour with American Jennifer Greco.
Oh, well, my name's Jennifer, and I give food tours for a company called Paris by Mouth.
Paris by Mouth offers 3-hour-long walking tours that introduce people to different neighborhoods in the city and the great food and wine within them. That day, Jennifer and I strolled around Paris's Marais neighborhood. Bringing along my trusty digital recorder, I followed Jennifer from shop to shop while she described the delicacies we would discover inside. Jennifer began by taking me down a busy side street with cars and mopeds rushing by us while Parisians went about their daily business. Our first stop was a tiny little ham and charcuterie shop, so small you could walk right past it if you weren't paying attention. The shop is called Caractère de cochon, a play on words that means pig-headed, in the same sense that we use that expression to describe a particularly stubborn individual.
So this is caractère de cochon, and I jokingly refer to it as a temple of ham, because when you come in here, you're honestly surrounded by air-cured hams, cooked hams, and then all of these beautiful dried sausages that come from all over Europe. Solo, the owner, has gone all over. He's collected some really interesting things here. Many of them are very rare, very small production, and very difficult to find outside of the region that they're produced in. So he has hams that are from Italy. They're wrapped up in grape must. Grape must is the leftover stems and seeds and skins after the grape pressing. So they hang these hams for a couple of years, and they wrap them with this grape must, and it imparts this lovely fruitiness into the ham. He has another one that is a certain breed of ham called the Noir de Bigorre. And they eat nothing but acorns their entire life. And then they age these hams for about 4 years. So you get this incredible nutty flavor. So if you've only ever had a prosciutto or a serrano type ham, these will blow your mind. And one of the coolest things he has in here, it's under this glass dome here.
It looks like meatballs.
It does look like meatballs. It is a cured sausage meat that is full of little bits of truffle from France and then covered in Parmesan cheese. It's called a snowball. In English, it's not a boule de neige. It's called a snowball. And I've never seen them for sale anywhere else. And they actually come from Austria. It's a cured sausage meat that you would slice like a pepperoni or a salami. So you just slice it thinly and eat it, and it has the really wonderful flavor of truffle, but not too truffly.
As Jennifer pointed out, some of her favorites, the shop owner, who simply goes by the name Solo, greeted us and began to give us a tasting tour of his amazing display of meat.
This one has a vein of...
This is a ham with truffle.
Right.
And this is a culatello with truffle. What is the difference between ham and culatello? The ham is a leg.
Okay.
From here to here.
The thigh, we'd say, yeah.
And this is a pump.
Okay.
Culatello in Italian. In Italian is a boom boom.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, the rear end.
It's the rear end.
Voilà. So, that's the difference between what they say when they say it's culatello, it's not ham.
It's not ham, okay.
Culatello is only from
the
high part.
Right.
Voilà.
Yes.
Et là, nous avons.
This is a fascinating one. It's
voilà.
Wrapped in hay or straw, and then they pour, is it Armagnac or Cognac?
Armagnac
over it, and they light it on fire.
Incredible.
Voilà. Yes. Et là, par exemple, là aussi, c'est pas très particulier. This is very particular because it's a specialty from Corsica, the south of the island, the famous island in Italy. It's made of liver.
The liver?
Liver. Or the liver, le foie.
Okay, the liver.
The liver, and they smoke them.
Oh, wow.
And they add some maigre de porc. Comment on appelle maigre de porc?
Pork fat. Maigre?
Maigre. It's non. Fat. It's like bacon, but the other part of the bacon more meat and no more fat.
Okay.
Maigre is thin.
So it's not big giant chunks of fat.
Voilà.
It's meat with a little bit of fat to add that soft, unctuous texture.
Voilà.
Okay.
You need fat everywhere.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, in your entire shop, what do you think you have today that is the rarest that no one might ever see?
The beef ham.
Ah.
The beef ham is it's done yesterday. Yeah, yesterday. Last
Not
year.
Yesterday.
It's like yesterday.
It's
last
months.
Year. And it's vintage 10 months. And it's from also the la cuisse.
The thigh. Ah.
Voilà.
Well, I think we just have to buy a lot of it.
Okay.
Aucun Boeing sur mon transit, aucun bateau sous mon transat. Je cherche en vain la portée exacte. Je cherche en vain.
Bonjour. Donc, on va prendre une baguette, s'il vous plaît. Does everyone want a croissant? Trois croissants.
Next up on our tour, Jennifer took us to a bakery located in the center of town, 134 RDT Boulangerie Pâtisserie. We bought some croissants and sat down on a bench overlooking the bustling shop. In between bites of croissant, Jennifer explained the unique story of the baker at 134 RDT.
I wanted to introduce you to this bakery because this is owned by a baker named Benjamin Turquier. And he's really unusual because he didn't start his career as a baker. He started as an auditor in finance and about 8 years ago decided to completely change his life and start baking bread. And since he did that, he's done incredibly well for himself. There's a competition called the Best Baguette of Paris that's held every year. It's held at the end of March, and he's placed 3 times in the top 10 of this competition since he started baking bread. So that's a really, really big deal. The first prize winner of this competition, they get about 4,000 euros as prize money, but it's the recognition that they get, and their business goes up. And they also get to provide baguettes to the president at the Élysée Palace for the entire year that they're number one.
That's fantastic.
I know,
so
it is.
What do you think makes his baguette so top and number one?
It's a special baguette called the baguette de tradition, like tradition. So it's an older style. It only has 4 ingredients in it. It's a protected item, food item. It's just flour, water, yeast, and salt. It's all hand done. The baguettes are risen in cloth-lined baskets. So it is it's a labor of love, I'd say. So the other unusual thing about Benjamin, in addition to making award-winning bread and croissants, is he is an award-winning triathlete as well. And they deliver bread to several restaurants here in the neighborhood, and it's really, really cute because when he is training, he'll bring his bicycle to the bakery, and he'll strap on a backpack full of baguettes and go off and train and make deliveries at the same time. So he really is, I call him a Renaissance man. I've seen him in the back up on a ladder with his head in the ceiling, fixing the electrics. I think he can do absolutely anything.
Well, sitting here on this bench with you, Jennifer, I'm really curious what the very best croissant in Paris might sound like. It's really hard for everybody to get a taste, but maybe they could get a crackly sound.
Bonjour, je m'appelle Jean-Luc, vous êtes dans la maison Tiercelin, très vieille maison familiale, c'est la 7e génération.
We continued our walking tour to the Upper Marais so we could visit an ancient spice shop. Upon entering the building, the scent of saffron lay heavy in the air, and we were greeted by shop owner Jean-Luc, who explained the history of his family's business.
C'est très basique, classique, la coriandre, le thym. Ou bien après, nous avons un superbe mélange.
For the sake of listeners who don't speak French, I turned back to Jennifer for translation.
Okay, we are in the Maison Tiercelin. This is a 7th-generation spice merchant. They started with a saffron farm in the south of France in 1809, and it's grown into this little empire of spices, spice blends that they have made themselves. They still are famous for their saffron. They do beautiful mixes of salt with truffles and spices and some with rose petals or chili peppers. They're really well known for their vast array of peppercorns. They have peppercorns from Nepal, from China, from India, from Madagascar, different flavors and for different uses. And this is one of the most fun parts of the shop. They call this their spice sniffing bar or bar à sniffer. So they have this vast array of spices here. You can smell them and get an idea of what they would be like before you actually buy.
Let's examine some of these things. Where would we start?
Well, we're going to start with something a little sweet. This is called a tonka bean. And the tonka bean is a wild almond from South America. It's actually illegal in America, in the United States. It is, they say that it has trace amounts of coumarin, which is where we get the drug name Coumadin. Mm-hmm. So trace amounts of a blood thinner. I mean, so trace you'd have to eat kilos of it to be sick or to have your blood thinned, but the FDA banned it. So you can't get this in the States anymore. But it's used in desserts. It has a really interesting aroma.
That was lovely. A very lovely, rich, sweet, deep scent. Really, yes. Unlike anything I've ever smelled before.
Kind of a combination of cherries, almonds, cinnamon, vanilla, and you grate it because they're big black almonds, and you grate it like you would with a nutmeg and infuse milk or cream and make ice creams or creme brulees, things like that.
And what else?
Okay, this is one of the most unusual things I've ever encountered. It's called a Timut peppercorn. So it's a peppercorn that you'd crush in a mortar and pestle like you would with a Szechuan peppercorn, but it has this amazing citrusy, grapefruity type aroma.
Yes.
Very light, beautiful on simple grilled fish, grilled chicken, but very unusual. And I've looked for it in other spice shops. I've never been able to find it anywhere else. And Jean-Luc has some saffron here he wants you to be able to smell.
Ooh, the real thing.
Yes.
Beautiful. After a busy afternoon touring a variety of shops in the Marais, the shadows began to stretch out into the street, and the tour began winding down. Jennifer, now, of course, that we've had the bread, we've had the ham, we've spiced it up, now, of course, we're going to end with the sweets on this wonderful, delicious walk through Paris. So where are we, and why is this place so special?
We are at Jacques Chenin Chocolaterie. Jacques is considered one of the best chocolate makers in Paris. He comes from a background that has no formal training. He really is a self-made man. This building dates back to the 17th century, and he's created this beautiful space where you can come and you can buy his chocolates, his pâte de fruits, which are little fruit jellies. They're very unusual because they're not gummy and sticky like many people think they are. They're made with 80% fresh fruit or vegetable because he does some unusual flavors like beet and fennel and zucchini. But then he'll do more classic flavors like strawberry and raspberry and mango and passion fruit. And then he also has become quite famous for his caramels. I like to refer to them as butter bombs because they are so buttery, technically very, very difficult to make, to have them hold together. They're not sticky and chewy like a caramel that we're all used to. These are something very special.
Yeah, we tried one, and it doesn't stick to your teeth.
No.
It kind of melts in your mouth. Yeah. And amazing range of flavors.
Yes.
Let's walk over to the chocolate case because the view is so stunning. Each piece of chocolate really looks like a little piece of artwork.
Yes. Everything is made here upstairs. There's this beautiful circular staircase in the middle of the shop. And there's about 18 people working up there. And he makes some unusual flavors. This one here, for instance, is dark chocolate with tarragon. This one is wonderful if you like chocolate and mint together because it's not peppermint. It's actual fresh spearmint. And someone once described it to me as tasting like a chocolate mojito.
Oh.
Because you really taste the essence of the mint. He also does basil. He does a Szechuan peppercorn, a chestnut honey. And if he does use any fresh herbs, he grows them here on the roof.
Oh.
And if he uses the spices, like the Szechuan peppercorn or the honey and the chestnut honey, he buys them at the spice shop that we were just at.
Well,
so very much in the neighborhood.
I spotted that one that is the tonka.
Oh, the tonka bean.
The tonka tech.
Yes.
Yes, with the fève de tonka.
Yes.
And that is the most unusual taste.
Yeah.
The scent of it was fascinating. And to me, it reminds me of the inside of a peach pit, sort of sour and sweet and fruity and all of that together. Really delicious. When you come here, how do you choose, Jennifer?
It's hard. I try to get a mix of flavors so people can get an idea of what he does with the herbs and something with the nuts, and then usually a more classic, like a coffee or just a plain ganache with dark chocolate. He never uses too much sugar, so nothing here is overly sweet, but very, very intense. They're not very big, but if you have a couple, you're satisfied. You don't need a giant bar of chocolate here to get that, to get your chocolate fix, I guess.
Well, we're going to put all the addresses of the amazing places we visited on the Louisiana Eats website. But if someone would like to get in touch with you all, what's the website they should visit?
It's parisbymouth.com. And we have a great website that helps people navigate the food scene in Paris because it changes every day. So we're a group of food writers and food experts. And so we're constantly looking at the food scene. And then we have tours in several different neighborhoods.
Even if you're just dreaming of coming to Paris, yes, you could have fun visiting it online.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, yeah. Thank you, Jennifer. You're thanks so much for spending the day with us.
It was a pleasure.
That was tour guide extraordinaire Jennifer Greco and our 2015 visit to Paris's Marais neighborhood. To stay au courant with all things food-related in Paris, including how the coronavirus is affecting the service industry there, visit parisbymouth.com.
How you gonna keep them down on the farm after they seem hairy? How you gonna keep them away from Broadway, jazzing around and painting the town?
What is foie gras and how is it made? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back.
Imagine Reuben when he meets his pa. He'll kiss his cheek and holler, ooh la la. How you gonna keep
him? Hi, are you interested in K-pop music but can never find it on your local radio? Well, look no further. With K-Pop Fever, we have boy groups, girl groups, soloists, and all of your K-pop favorites. So join me, JC, on Mondays at midnight with KRVS on 88.7 FM Radio.
Cajun, swamp pop, zydeco, creole, and more. It's all right here on En Card with me, your host, Megan Constantin. Saturday mornings at 7 and Sunday afternoons at 3.
This is Ira Glass of This American Life. Every week on our show, we apply the tools of journalism to stories that are so small and personal, journalists normally would not cover them.
It was my forged signature, and it was my boyfriend's handwriting.
Or we look at stories that are big. Refugees, school segregation in America, the split in the Republican Party.
Climbing out from the smoking ruin and say, anybody else alive around here?
And find surprising personal stories there, too. This American Life.
Coming up tonight at 7 on KRVS.
I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. Edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Louisiana Fish Fry, breadings, boils, new air fry mixes, and more classic Louisiana dishes available everywhere. Dig into homemade Louisiana flavor. And from the St. Tammany Parish Tourist Commission, just 40 minutes from New Orleans, Louisiana North Shore's Tammany Taste features the bounty of the bayou and rich culinary culture from award-winning chefs, mom-and-pop restaurants, specialty bakers, and creative mixologists. To discover more, request the newly released Explore the North Shore Inspiration Guide for local stories, custom itineraries, and event information at LouisianaNorthShore.com. St. Tammany Parish, where New Orleans has come to play and get away for more than a century.
Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. What is foie gras, and how is it made? Foie gras is the fattened liver of ducks and geese that has long been a traditional French luxury food. Much controversy surrounds foie gras production because the animals are force-fed to achieve that prized fat liver. The practice of force-feeding animals has been carried out perhaps since the Egyptians began the practice as early as 2500 BC. The Toulouse area of France has long been the center of foie gras production. French women would hold the goose between their knees as they lovingly stroked the alcohol-laden food down their long necks. Not all production in France today is that humane, but in the U.S., foie gras manufacturers such as Hudson River Valley produce foie gras from happy free-range ducks and geese. Their production methods are so humane that they were able to have the California foie gras ban overturned. I'm Poppy Tooker, and this is Louisiana Eats. On my last day in Paris, I had the great fortune to visit a real Parisian marché. Held under the metro near the end of the line, this bustling marketplace appears magically every Wednesday and Sunday and is the favorite marché of American expats, Patricia Wilson and Raynette DiCicco.
3.46, s'il vous plaît, madame. Pour la photo, picture.
For the radio.
On a sunny Sunday afternoon, I joined Patricia and Raynette for a personal tour of some of their favorite vendors in the marché.
All of that basil, those beautiful lettuces.
All the lettuces are gorgeous here, aren't they?
We sampled fruit, vegetables, meats, and delicious breads, all the while taking in the sights, sounds, and smells of a typical Parisian market day.
Okay. Bonjour, madame.
La production Bordeaux.
Ça, c'est le foie gras de canard. C'est naturel. Il n'y a pas d'alcool dedans. Naturel.
It's all natural, no alcohol.
Dark liver.
Not good.
Oh, my goodness.
It's so good.
On est éleveur.
You should take some.
I'm going to.
After we'd completed our stroll up and down the marché, Patricia, Raynette, and I went to Raynette's apartment, complete with an incredible view of the Eiffel Tower, for a little rosé and conversation. There, they passionately expressed how important Paris has been in their lives and the role the market has played in their friendship.
My name is Raynette DiCicco, and I'm from Connecticut. I own a travel agency in Puerto Rico. But my heart is in Paris, and this is home.
I'm Patricia Wilson. I've moved here from South Beach, Miami, where I was teaching at Johnson & Wales University. I'm now retired. I'm from Puerto Rico, of Canadian descent, and I'm here in Paris.
So you brought me today to that beautiful marché. This is a bit of a tradition with you and Raynette.
Yes.
You meet on Sundays. Tell me what a Sunday is like.
Our tradition, I guess we'd say, I never looked at it as a tradition, but I'd come up, do the market, buy a few things, look around, even shoes. I bought some shoes today, some walking shoes, maybe a scarf, maybe some flowers, take pictures, send them back to my students.
The daily marché is probably the most incredible thing you can do in Paris. It is every kind of fish, meat, clothing, cheeses, you name it. It's in the marché. And the advantage of being in the marché is that it is fresh. It is that day fresh. They go out to the outskirts of Paris and buy it at 4 o'clock every morning. The marchés are set up about 7:30. They finish at 1:30 or 2. That's it. They are closed. And the city cleans it up in about 1 hour. You would never even know it was there.
If everything gets so cleaned up and everything is so beautiful, what happens at the end of the market?
First of all, they sell almost everything. They pretty much know how much they need. There is very little waste. Only the overripe things will be kind of put on the side. And people, some of the indigent people, can pick it up. That's fine. But it is not thrown away.
Well, as we walk through the market, that was one of the things that was abundantly clear to me. Nothing was wasted. I've never seen fish heads for sale. I've never seen some of the animal pieces parts that were there in the cases for sale. The French don't waste a thing.
Absolutely nothing. And they all have traditional things that they make with them. So depending on the season, you should see it in the fall and winter when the venison comes in and the pheasants and, oh, all the ducks, the wild ducks.
Lynette, as we walk through the market, the scents, the sounds.
Oh, the smell.
Oh, the way that the vendors call out to the customers.
Certain ones always tell the same story. Like the Eggman goes, cock-a-doodle-doo. I went, the first time I heard it, I went, what's that? That's the Eggman.
Tell me a little bit about how it is to live in Paris as an American.
As long as you say please and thank you, you are welcome. The French are so happy to have you be part of their neighborhood. And don't think of them as being nasty French. That is a total untruth. They are very, very hospitable.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your generosity of time and sharing your Paris with me. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad that you're here, and I hope you come back a lot more.
Happy New Orleans.
Raynette DiCicco and Patricia Wilson, together in Paris in the summer of 2015. Today, Raynette remains a devoted Parisian transplant, while my friend Patricia has since returned to live in the States. But the memories we made together that special Sunday in Paris are treasures I'll revisit the rest of my life. Après l'orage vient les beaux jours. Après. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Catch up on previous editions of Louisiana Eats on poppytooker.com, where we have 10 years of Louisiana Eats editions available for pod and webcasting, along with recipes and videos, too. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Louisiana Fish Fry, Camellia Brand Beans, and the St. Tammany Parish Tourist Commission. And from D'Agostino Pasta, handcrafted in Louisiana from semolina wheat and air-dried over rods in wooden cellars, D'Agostino Pasta is made just as it's been done in Sicily for centuries. D'Agostino's all-natural, preservative-free pasta is available in traditional forms, as well as their signature alligator, crawfish, and fleur-de-lis shaped pastas. Visit D'AgostinoPasta.com to learn more. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Palace Cafe, located in the historic Wehrlein Music Building on Canal Street, now open for indoor and outdoor dining Tuesday through Sunday with brunch served weekends. Original theme music composed by David Pomerleau and performed by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to senior producer Joe Schreiner and producer and special projects manager Reggie Morris. And to our business manager and social media maven, Maddie Mulladew. Catch up with us anytime on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, too. Louisiana Eats is a production of Poppy Tooker Broadcasting.